Hello and welcome to episode 82 of Speak Beastie for March 10th, 2019.
I'm Lizzie.
And I'm Lane.
Yay!
Lane is back. So, Lane, you've been on before, but would you just, like, briefly reintroduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm our social media coordinator. I work with our social teams on all of our social media accounts. And I think this is my fourth episode, maybe.
Ooh.
The last one I was on was the one right before the movie came out. We did our final theorizing. It was very fun.
And I'm sure all the Beasties are thinking like, yep, we know who she is now.
I mean, I just love that we have such a dedicated social media team.
Yes.
The people who do the posting and stuff, everyone's amazing on that team. It's great to work with everybody, and it's a lot of fun to go find the things to post, you know.
Oh, you find gems as well, you guys. I mean, come on, you knock me out multiple times. I'm like, oh!
Yeah,
I mean, all the credit to them. They're the best.
I mean, I kind of feel like I have to love our social media, but I just genuinely do love it. Just, like, I have, like, alerts set for all, like, our social media. Just goes, I want to be there when stuff gets posted. I want to see it.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah, everybody finds some great stuff.
We really do, yeah. So, thank you for being back here with us for this special episode.
Thanks for having
me. Before I give too much away, but this is a special episode. Because I'm on.
I mean, come on.
Also, listeners, I'm just going to give you a brief heads up. My voice might give out at some point or be croaky because I got an elbow to the throat just 2 days ago because apparently I don't play basketball, I do street fighting now. Just a heads up, I'm hoping it'll be fine though.
I'm starting to think we might need to like come and watch you play basketball, trip to Germany to just protect you. I'm not sure I approve of this. I'm getting the fierce Gryffindor in me who's like, okay, we need to book some flights to Germany right now for her next match.
See, the Hufflepuff in me was like, well, let's get you some tea. We got to make sure it has some local honey so it'll help your throat and your allergies.
Can you guys just come visit me now?
Yeah, we'll sort it. Yeah.
But I think I'm just going to now hand over to Lizzie so she can talk and I can be quiet.
Okay, let's hit the Phoenix Register.
And now a message from our sponsors.
Hey you, yes you, the magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint, just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as $1 a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind-the-scenes features. But wait, there's more! Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wigs Knees and How.
So our Patreon supporters will be aware that we have a special bonus episode which focuses on the Crimes of Grindelwald deleted scenes and what we learned. So if you're not a Patreon supporter, hang on. It will be coming out soon to you guys. But if you are a Patreon and you've not listened to it yet, go check it out.
What are you even doing with your life?
Yeah, come on, guys. We give you a bonus episode. You need to listen to it. And yeah. yeah, you can't go wrong with a bit of breaking down of the deleted scenes. So go check that.
Of course, as always happens, the curse of the news, you know. The news came out right after we recorded an episode, so this was making up for it.
Definitely.
We need to talk with the news. They need to
line up with us. They need to give us some ideas. We need a calendar. Come on, sort it. So recently we've been given some more information by Jude Law. So if you want to check it out, it's on MuggleNet. Why does Dumbledore admire Newt above all others? And Jude Law may have the answer. Now, this is a super detailed interview. And I'm not going to spoil it all by, you know, reading it all out to you. But there are some cracking bits in there. And I think the standout bit for me was Jude says, "This is something J.K. Rowling said to me. The reason he loves Newt is because Newt loves beasts, and I think he thinks he's a beast. I think he thinks he's dark, that he's seen and done things that he wishes he hadn't, and he's constantly pulling himself back into the right moral side." I mean, oh, I get goosebumps.
Poor Dumbledore. So sad for himself. Oh,
I mean, the depth there of Jude Law, I was like, oh, okay. Like, I need to sit down. I need to take a minute. But, you know, I think that is something so true. If we think about the things that we learn in the Potter series, and to know that Jude Law is taking this on and that J.K. Rowling has said this, I'm like, oh, where are we going? Come on, where are we going? I need more.
Yeah, I fear it's going to get darker first before it's going to get better for Dumbledore. I mean, we kind of know that, but...
I mean, I'm kind of embracing this. I'm like, come on, give me more. Give me the juice.
I mean, Dumbledore's my favourite character, so, like, please.
Dumbledore's definitely one of the biggest, maybe not unanswered questions, but, like, unfinished that we have from the Potter series. So, yeah, this is really exciting to get new information and to have Jude taking it on, and so far doing a great job.
So this is there's a link in the article to a full video, and Lynch interviews, so it takes around 9 minutes, the videos, and she speaks with Zoe Kravitz, Callum Turner, Catherine Woodston, Dan Fogler, Alison Sudol, Ezra Mira, Claudia Kim. Yeah, you don't want to miss that one, so you want to go have a read of that. And we love getting the insight into Jude, but there has also been bad news, and we don't like this. So, Everyone, is Fantastic Beasts being pushed to 2021?
Sounds like it.
Sorry, that was a really high-pitched noise.
I mean, we would have, like, the original date would have been November 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So, depending on when 21... that might just be weeks.
Perhaps.
Oh, they maybe, put it a whole year.
Maybe they'll get summer releases now.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's kind of questioning on whether this is to do with marketing and finances, as there's already a huge amount of money going into another series, which is due for release on November the 20th, 2020. So if they're wanting to push it a financial year, it may not look good for our next dose of beasts. But we do also have to think Catherine Woodson is pregnant, and we want her to be able to, you know, enjoy some time with her baby and get back to health and be ready for this. But, you know, my nerves may not cope. And I'm really selfish right now because there's a long time to wait.
I mean, the thing is, this is only the case because Warner Brothers was like, so we're going to make 5 movies. The first 3 are going to come out on those specific dates.
Yeah.
Before even the first movie came out. And now that they're actually realizing that, hey, they need more time for whatever reasons, fans are being like, but you promised us.
Yeah, I am putting my hand up right now.
Whereas if they just had gone with, like, releasing a date with, like, every next movie coming out, we wouldn't be. I mean, then again, we all always are a wreck just with, like, when is the trailer going to be released? Why are they not telling us when the trailer is going to be released? And now it's going to be like, when's the trailer going to release? And when is the movie coming out?
We're going to have to start threatening to set Megan on them again. Like Megan and her tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the only way forward. You know, just nominating you out there, Megan.
I mean, I still think you should go your clothes over.
Well, to be fair, yeah.
Poor Megan, who always has to pay for
it. Okay, everyone supply me with tomatoes. I will sort this out, okay? Please don't give a restraining order against me, Warner Brothers. I really like you.
I mean, I could take this really political and be like, when Brexit comes, you probably don't have fresh produce, but hey.
You took it there. You took it there.
Yeah, all because my company is currently trying to sort out what's going to happen when Brexit happens.
You know, I genuinely nearly applied for a job which was called a Brexit administrator, and I was like, yeah, just don't do it, Lizzie. Don't do it.
Oh, wow. I mean, there's a lot of change for your country coming.
Yeah, and apparently we're still not getting Fantastic Beasts till 2021. I mean, come on.
No good news.
I got really loud then. I'm sorry, guys.
I mean, it's worth being passionate about.
Yeah. Yeah, so sadly, we've had to end the Phoenix Register on sad, bad news. It's just sad.
Maybe it just means we're going to get an even better movie because they're taking more time for it.
Yeah. I'm happy to jump on that one.
I'm just hoping for it. Then again, I'm also kind of telling myself it can't really get that much worse.
Oh!
Sorry, I said
it.
I don't know.
You just ruined it. You ruined it, Oreo.
Sorry. Let's hope the owls come in fast and bring us some better news.
Get the owl treats ready.
The owls are loaded up with letters. Yeah, they're nice and full today. Last week's podcast question was, what do you think the importance is behind the theme words like crazy and coward and their effects in the wizarding world? So we had some cool, awesome comments from Diskid. They said, I think another main takeaway with the word coward and how it's used in the wizarding world is how not simple right and wrong is. One thing everybody who uses the word coward has in common in the series is their belief that the person who they are calling a coward is not doing what they believe is the right thing because they believe the person knows better, but is too scared to take the action that would be not cowardly. Even in cases where it seems obvious what the right thing is, like Jacob refusing to join the wizard Nazis, Queenie strongly did not believe he was making the right choice. She believed her choice was the right one. She called him a coward because part of her believed he knew she was right and was too scared to join her. This goes into the main takeaway discussed in the episode of not to be quick to judge other people. What is the right thing actually might not be so obvious to them or even obvious in general, as it may not even be so obvious to yourself.
Yeah. That's a really good point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love her, because I know this kid is a her, because I know her from Alohomora, our sister podcast, and she always has like really good comments,
mm-hmm.
and this one is another really great comment. Like, yeah. I'm just like, thank you for sending us that, now yeah. let's dig in.
And you know it's so right, because it's so easy to see only your perspective, and it can be quite easy to forget that, you know, the people around you have their own experiences and their own feelings, and they're going to react differently in different situations. And it's a really good point to bring this forward and to remind everyone of that.
Yeah, I think it kind of comes to, you know, the phrase of like, never judge a book by its cover kind of thing. Like, you only get a certain view of some person. You don't get the whole story. You don't get the backstory. You don't know where they're coming from. Like,
mm-hmm.
You can only obviously judge what you see. And I know that they've talked a lot about Snape in the last episode, especially with the coward thing and Lupin. And from the perspective that we see, as in like Harry's eyes, it was kind of rightfully so that he called them a coward. But obviously from like the perspective that we then get in the end, when we get to see Snape's memories, we realize that it's not really true, and that we just really did get a very, like, limited viewpoint. But then again, like, Snape is not really trying to, like, be nice and do anything for his case in, like, 6 years of Harry Potter, so... I don't know.
Yeah. I just like that even though we don't have the written word for Fantastic Beasts, we still have these complex interactions that we can use and we can analyze and stuff. Because, yeah, I think everything with Queenie has been one of the most interesting and, I don't want to say confused, things that we've got from Crimes of Grindelwald. But it's definitely something that we can talk about a lot. So that's just an exciting thing that we have the next 2+ years to talk about. And so we got another comment from Sharon that says, Queenie is not crazy. The prejudice of her world is crazy. Newt, the kindest character, still reacts to Queenie's mind reading as off, like she is doing it on purpose and should just stop. The American Wizarding World's fear of no mages is extreme. A second source of prejudice sends her into Grindelwald's orbit, a man who is saying all of the right things, even though we know he isn't sincere. And then she also said, great podcast as always. Thanks, Sharon.
Thanks, Sharon.
Yeah. So yeah, there's just more, you know, sides to Queenie's story here. The Newt, like if Newt thinks something's weird, then I don't know. We tend to trust Newt. But yeah, he does have this skewed vision of Queenie, so it'll be interesting to see how the world continues to view her and what this means for the rest of her story.
I also think it just kind of fits in with what we are going through as society as of right now, with like how we like looking back at like words or standards that we had and just like reviewing them and updating our views on the world in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I think there's something really primitive and people's reaction against Queenie, and it can often I'm thinking of the scene in the first film when, you know, Newt doesn't want her to learn about certain aspects of his life, and you know, people always want to keep certain aspects of their life private that they don't want to share, and for Queenie to be able to, through like no fault, no manipulation, nothing, no wrongdoing, she can see people's inner lives and aspects of themselves that they're trying to hide from the other world. And I think that can be a very scary idea. Like, you know, you kind of think stuff in your mind is kept secret and that's just for you. And then you have someone who comes along who, you know, changes that. And it is a really interesting dynamic in how you adjust with that. You're right. There's going to be a lot more on that to come, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just as you were saying that, I was reminded of, it's a German kind of like new church song that you call, like the word is probably a priest, who was imprisoned during World War II, and he wrote that song just kind of cope with prison, and you know, and I'm just going to briefly say what it says in German and I'm trying to translate it. It's called Die Gedanken sind frei, and that would translate to your thoughts are free, and then it just kind of goes on into like no one can catch them, they're just like for you, like basically saying even if they imprison you and they like torture you or whatever, you can still think what you want to think, they're not going to catch that.
Unless you're on the side of Grindelwald.
I mean, yeah. I just, because that ties in with World War II, yeah. That's just why it just came to me.
That's interesting. Yeah, I think Queenie's hard because she does have this thing that she can't help doing. And I feel like Newt tends to have really good judgment. And it's hard to imagine that he is misjudging her and that all of our other characters are misjudging her in some ways. And that'll just be, I'm just really interested in seeing how that goes forward because, yeah. We tend to trust Newt, but he's kind of wrong in some ways about Queenie.
I'm sure this is going to get even more complicated for us as time goes on.
Oh, probably.
Yeah.
So we've got one more letter in the Owl Post. This was from a message from one of our listeners, Matthew. Thanks, Matthew. He sent so many good theories that we cannot possibly go through most of them. So I picked out one that I find very interesting. But yeah, maybe we can go through more later, but, or not later, but you know, maybe we can go through more. But here's just a selection of his message to us. And it's about Lita, and it's a theory. He says, regarding Lita, I don't believe she is dead. The script makes no mention of death in the Protega Diabolica scene. In fact, it seems to actively avoid it. There's also no remnant of those taken by the fire. The Protega Diabolica, that's the blue fire. That's the name of it from the script. David Yates said that Lita being attacked by Grindelwald was a last-minute decision, which doesn't make sense considering that Rowling definitely has these stories and characters well mapped out to the end of the story. I believe the fire functions like a flu fire that takes prisoners to Nurmengard. Remember, one of the few details we learned about Grindelwald in Deathly Hallows is that he kept many wizard prisoners and that Nurmengard was built as a prison, not a home. Plus, Grindelwald is not Voldemort. He's not a psychopath, but a perverse idealist. Taking prisoners makes sense for his character. Capturing wizards and sending them to your prison cells and making it hurt along the way certainly qualifies as diabolical protection. Consider also that Theseus in mythology is the hero that saves his lady from the castle/prison by entering the maze and slaying the Minotaur. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a parallel there. Credence is very much a Minotaur, an extremely powerful half-man, half-beast that was raised without love. I suspect that when Grindelwald told her it's time to come home, he's not speaking to someone he just met. He's holding his rally in the Lestrange crypt after all. I expect a big reveal in the next film. So, yeah, this is a cool theory with some compelling evidence.
Yeah, I kind of sat there and was like, oh, okay, yep, oh, yep, and more. I actually really like that theory.
Yeah, I don't know if I just don't want Lita to be dead, or if I'm, like, buying into the theory, but, you know, I'm going to buy into the theory.
Wasn't there a mention in the Potter books that Grindelwald did keep prisoners who he thought would be useful there?
Oh, perhaps.
I might have to try and dig that out. I do have this thought often that when I've imagined something, and this might be Lita, like you said, the name, that I really want her to still be alive.
Yeah.
So I could have created something in Potter mythology, but I really like your points there, Matthew. That's really compelling.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I just believe that they didn't kill her off just because you wouldn't just do that with a character we just met.
Yeah.
That's what I'm holding on to, be like, yeah, there's probably more to come.
Hopefully. But now we have some cool points to convince us further that she's still around, because we want her to. I think it's also really neat to bring in, we've talked about the mythology behind Theseus, but if we have Lita prisoner somewhere, that just makes it even more relevant, I think. Having Credence as the Minotaur figure. That would be sad if they have to kill Credence.
Yeah.
But that's a different conversation.
Maybe, I fear that Credence will die, so.
Yeah, probably. But I don't want him to.
I just fear that that's gonna happen.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, we're having a really bumming us out episode here. Like, I'm sorry, here's some bad news. Oh, and this is pretty bad. Like, I need some kittens.
Yeah, people are gonna die.
Listen, the series is getting darker, so's the podcast.
We're gonna change our theme, like, song to, like, something really slow.
We'll just change the key tone. You know.
Like a Dixieland funeral dirge.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Matthew. Thank you for all of your wonderful theories. Seriously, maybe we'll figure out some way to share them. But there were so many good ones about, like, Credence and his real identity and if he is Corvus or if he isn't Corvus. Just all sorts of stuff. So thank you, Matthew. It was wonderful to read. And I'm totally on board with believing that Lita is not dead.
Now that we have fed the owls and sent them back, it's time for main discussion.
Ooh. You guys need to get so excited for this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, are you excited enough? Like, I want to be like in, like, you know, when people on stage be like, are you excited? And if the crowd is like, yeah, and then you're like, I can't hear you.
We're gonna have beasties around the world being like, yeah. Like, if you're on the yell bus, out, in like, the
yell
car.
It out in your car. Well, I'm excited.
I'm so excited. This is so good. We have been really lucky that we've got two amazing special guests who have agreed to let us interview them. Now, you'll be aware of the work. I'm sure you will be. And if you aren't, then you need to go and listen to this. So we have on this show two people who are involved in the making of the audiobook Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald, Makers, Mysteries and Magic. So I want to welcome to the show Hannah and Ravina. Hannah, do you want to introduce yourself to our listeners a little bit?
Sure. I'm Hannah Walker-Brown. I am an executive producer at Audible in the UK. And I was the producer and writer of our Fantastic Beasts behind-the-scenes audio adventure, Makers, Mysteries and Magic. I almost forgot the title then, but I didn't. It's good. Which was the first ever audio behind-the-scenes of a movie, actually ever, one of the first times that Warner Brothers have let someone like me holding a microphone onto their sets.
Wow.
So my name's Ravina Bargewar and I'm the senior commissioning editor for audio at Pottermore. So what my job entails is to develop the audiobook catalogue for Harry Potter across the world. So at Pottermore we're making audio versions of Harry Potter in all sorts of territories. So we're making audiobooks in America, we've just announced the Latin American release of Harry Potter with Carlos Ponce, who's a Puerto Rican narrator, and that's going to be available with Audible. We've been making audiobooks in Japan, in Italy, in France, in lots of countries. And we've also been trying to sort of think about the Wizarding World and how we can tell the stories around the Wizarding World and talk about it in audio. And so obviously with Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, the movies, this has been like a really, really kind of exciting moment for us to kind of think about those films and think about how we can kind of talk about what that part of J.K. Rowling's world. And yeah, I know you've been talking to Hannah just now about the making of audiobooks. So Fantastic Beasts and the Crimes of Grindelwald, Makers, Mysteries and Magic, which is quite a long title. But yeah, just the kind of opportunity that we had to kind of really make something that I don't think has been made before. So a making of just in audio. So yeah, we were very, very kind of lucky to be given access to the film production and to the set at Leavesden Studios. And Hannah was there and she kind of went and immersed herself in all of the various departments and the filmmaking techniques that go into making one of those films. And we've kind of, it's just been a really interesting project for us to sort of think about, like, how do we talk about this in a way that we're not going to be showing anything. We're not going to, a making of, you'd expect to see things like to see costumes or to see kind of set designs. But is there other things that you can do in audio that allow a different perspective or a different way of experiencing life on the film set? So, yeah, so that's what we were trying to do with this project. And I think it's been a lot of fun. And I think we learned quite a lot about it. So,
yeah, that's great. I mean, I don't think a lot of us knew what to expect from this project. And it was so, so, so exciting to be able to listen to it as a fan and to get these snippets. When you kind of started out with this project, what were your kind of main goals and motivations to kind of do this project?
I guess, well, first of all, the fact that it had never been done before. And I know Pottermore and Audible, we have a really good relationship. So we do bits and pieces together, and we wanted to kind of develop that They obviously knew the new film was coming out, and it just felt like something really exciting, like really challenging, but a great opportunity to just do something new and kind of, we could kind of make the rules because no one had done it before. And for me, I mean, I love filmmaking. I was a huge fan of Harry Potter as a kid. And so just the opportunity to be on the set was very exciting. So I think, you know, on paper, it's super exciting. Then we actually started doing it. It just got better every single day. So I think those were kind of the main reasons that we wanted to do it. Not that I was a Harry Potter fan as a kid. That was kind of irrelevant at this point. We were doing it, whether I was a fan or not. But yeah, it was kind of our close partnership with Pottermore, as well as, you know, making something that no one had ever heard before.
And why exactly did you decide to do an audio documentary? Because I'm sure everyone is familiar with like video documentaries, but an audio documentary is kind of a new idea. What did you think was going to be the main benefit of that?
It's not actually a new idea. They've been around for a very, 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 very long time, even before film documentary. So it's not necessarily a new idea. And I'd been making them freelance for the BBC years prior to this. Obviously, Audible is an audio company, but I think there's something about audio that is so intimate, and you can almost go into another world that you can't necessarily do when you're watching things on screen. I think the other thing about audio is, you know, you use your imagination, and I think we're quite keen to harness that in the same way that when you read the books, you're in this world, and it's up to the listener, you know, what people look like or what they think the environment's like, and you're given just enough information that you can picture it. And I think that's something we very much wanted to recreate within the audio. And also when you have someone like Dan Fogler speaking directly to you, so directly to your ears, it's you feel like you're there with him, and there isn't kind of a screen between you, but, you know, he's on your commute with you, or he's sitting on your bed, he, you know, wherever you are. So I think that was really important for us. For the fans, but also listeners, to have that experience.
I was saying to the other host before you joined the call that I started listening to it, and I had a few jobs to do around the house. I literally sat down on my bed, and then hours passed. When I kind of got to a point where I had to pause it, I was genuinely astonished that Dan was not in my room with me. Definitely had that kind of intimacy, and it really was, oh yeah, it wasn't what I expected. And at the same time, it just drew me in. So yeah, it definitely has that feel to it.
Yeah, well, that's what we wanted.
Although I was really disappointed when Dan wasn't around, but, you know, I kind of wanted him to narrate my life from then on.
Oh my God, I was disappointed when we had to leave the studio. So I just want to hang out with him all the time.
So what was there something that you were most excited about to share with fans, or was it just the kind of whole concept and idea and that level of intimacy that you were able to achieve with this?
I think for fans, one of the things that might not be clear is just how many people who work on the films and have done since the very first Harry Potter film. So I think what we kind of learned was that there is a kind of unseen family of film crew and filmmakers that have been developing this world for, you know, some of them are coming up to 20 years where they've been there from the beginning, and they've kind of thought about how things are going to look, or how to design things that were only available in kind of Joe's imagination, and how to interpret that. And I think there were points in the audiobook where some of those people are kind of, you know, 20 years on, they're encountering things that they've made in the first few films. And those, especially when in the film go back to Hogwarts, and, you know, some of that, a lot of those objects and the sets were brought back out. So I think it was really great to hear just people kind of coming across their own creations from before, and kind of seeing where the world is going, and kind of enjoying that journey as well, thinking, oh, that's not the end of that. It's still here. We're going to learn more about it now. And yeah, I think that was quite exciting. Yeah, I'm just trying to think of other things that, you know, the fans in particular. I really think that Jude Law and talking about his interpretation of Dumbledore is really special. I think he, when you hear it in the audiobook, you'll sort of hear how much work and how much thought he put into that character. And I think that you get some like really interesting insights about, you know, inspiration that he took from, you know, from film and from other kinds of types of performance to kind of make, you know, continue the character, but from a time before, but also put his own kind of interpretation into it.
I think Jude Law has gone down as one of the kind of hidden gems almost. We got very involved in the Newt adorableness and Eddie just being this, what's it, cinnamon roll. And and then Jude's just kind of evolved, and we are learning more and more about what he's put into this role. And you know, I can't wait to see what happens going forward. And we know he's going to bring so much to this role that he definitely is one of those people that, yeah, we just want to know more of Jude.
I think just the very individual stories, because obviously there's the big story, you know, you've got the big names in there who are offering character insights. There's, you know, David Heyman, Colleen Atwood, all of those people. But I think what I was really excited about was kind of the people that had been making wands since the first Harry Potter film, or who were in props. Like, how much of this film is handmade blew my mind. And that was something I was really excited by. And I think it's those moments, like we call them water cooler moments, when you find something out either on TV or on the radio the next day when you're standing at the water cooler, you tell your friend. So it's very little things, actually, that I was really excited about. Puppeteer, Robin Guyver, the fact that he has a team of actors from Warhorse who play the beasts on the set, so the actors are physically responding to something as well, was something I was very interested in. So I think it's the little things that make up the bigger picture, I think.
What was the most interesting thing you learned that didn't make it into the documentary?
Oh, I mean, I recorded so much. So there was hundreds of hours of tape. And I mean, the piece is long. I think it's almost 6 hours. So obviously a lot did go in, but you kind of always have to lose some bits. I think there was this amazing story, actually. There was a woman who was a florist in her former life, and at kind of 40 years old, she decided to go back to university, and she did a course in, I think it was model making and special effects, and she was making all the brooms for the film, because like she would arrange flowers, she was arranging the ends of the brooms.
Oh, so, my goodness.
Yeah, and her son had been a massive Harry Potter fan, and so we chatted to her for a bit, and he was just so excited that his mum was now but making the brooms. So that was a really nice bit that unfortunately didn't make the cut, but she was a great woman, and the brooms are, well, they're fantastic when you see them in real life.
Wow, that's so cool. I mean, I'm personally, and I'm sure I'm speaking for everyone else listening to this podcast, I'm really jealous that you even get to see behind the scenes. I mean, I want to be on the set and see all this like magic happening and how it happens. So what was your favorite part of getting to like see behind the scenes?
I guess, I mean, walking around the sets is pretty special, because they had built the whole of Paris on this back lot, you know, outside of Watford in the north of London, and you feel like you're there, and the amount of detail that goes into every single thing. So I'd be opening drawers in the set, and it would be full of props. So in the one shop, they had handwritten receipts. So it wasn't just, you know, a facade. It's all as if it's happening. And people never go in the shops. That was the most incredible thing. They're lit for the night scenes, but there are no scenes in the shops. And yet they dress them as if there's action taking place in there and the audience is going to see. And I think just the way they create this environment for the cast, so they feel like they're in that world, that was amazing. And also being in the props workshop, I loved, with Christine Short and seeing all the kind of little bits they were making, the wands, they were making loads of sweets for the circus scene, they were making beast poo, and just incredibly creative every single department is. And I think a lot of people, myself included, thought it was mostly CGI, but the fact that everything is built by human hands was pretty astonishing. So I think just being able to witness that and walk around it was really special for me, and a real privilege, actually.
I mean, it's definitely something we all dream of, and we have had some staff members, and Claire was our last host who managed to visit the set as well, was invited by Warner Brothers, and it's one of those things up there that I think every Potter Fantastic Beasts fan dreams of. So mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's one of those things you get to tick it off your list.
Yeah.
So it was a massive kind of project that you took on, not only kind of going to the set and talking to all the creators, but, you know, then you had the post-production stuff, working a bit more closely with Dan. What were the kind of most unexpected challenges you faced during this?
I guess just the amount of material that I collected, and then having, again, like, to whittle it down, and you never want to lose the bits you love. But I think just making sure that, first of all, it made sense, and we were giving the listener something that they hadn't heard before, but also the fans something, following a narrative. I think it was just, going through everything and losing a lot, because if you've done 100 hours of recording and you've got 6 to tell the story, then that's, you know, that's quite a lot of hours. So I think that was challenging. Not challenging, it just took a lot of time for us to really get down to the bits we knew that we had to keep. And then from there, you know, we formed our chapters and our themes and our narrative. But initially, it was just kind of going through that material. And, I mean, it's a sea of transcripts, like, everyone was interviewed maybe 2 or 3 times, so that was it took a long time, I think, but hopefully we got the right bits.
So with the kind of releasing more films and the Fantastic Beasts series evolving, are there any plans in the work for more of these style audiobooks coming for the next films?
There are no plans at the moment, but obviously the next film is quite a while away. Mm. So I think, you know, we as Pottermore, we want to continue to, you know, we want to come along with the film world, and, you know, to kind of help the fans to experience other sides of those films. So I think you'll just have to watch this space and see.
I'll be watching eagerly. I'll just be sat there waiting on my laptop being like, come on.
Yeah.
Will there be a print version of this audiobook? It had so much cool stuff in it that, you know, it'd be cool to have it in your hands too.
There isn't a print version of the audiobook. There's other print versions, you know, print books that talk about the making of The Crimes of Grindelwald. Mm-hmm. So you can get things in print that will talk about it. But I think with print and audio, there's different things to tell. So a print book would do a much better job of kind of giving you, talking more about the visual elements and of filmmaking. Whereas the audiobook, I think it just works as its own thing. It's kind of like an ear. It's like almost like a sort of oral window into filmmaking. Like it's there to make you sort of feel like, to kind of give you, like I said before, like to give you a different, like a different vantage point of what filmmaking is like. And I think you'll hear on the audiobook, there's moments where you can actually hear inside some of those workshops where things are being made. You can hear kind of like the tools that are used. You can hear the sounds of, you know, I think quite, and Hannah will probably tell you, but a lot of filmmaking is, it can, although it will be very quiet on the set where the actors are performing, that the kind of workshops are quite vibrant. They can be quite noisy places. You'll get people that are they're very, very skilled at construction and building really huge things. So I think just that different side of filmmaking is where the audio is kind of quite special in a way.
It's definitely, you do feel like you're on set, you do feel like you're kind of been snuck in inside of someone's pocket where you shouldn't be, but you're just seeing it all happen. It really does take you there. So I guess we kind of want to know as well, you filmed, recorded so much for the Fantastic Beasts of Crimes of Grindelwald's Makers, Mysteries and Magic. And is there going to be a spoiler-filled version kind of in the future that we might be able to look forward to potentially? I'm just, yeah, there was so much insight in that, and it would be great to hear even more.
Have to wait and see.
Oh,
I think
so I'm gonna have to set multiple reminders now.
Yeah, I think as well, if you listen to Dan Fogler and his performance, he is a brilliant, obviously he's a brilliant screen performer. But we were just bowled away by his audio performances. He added another layer to this, that it wasn't just documentary, it had a kind of performance layer to it as well. So I think he's quite good at giving a few inferences to some of the things that perhaps we couldn't say in the audiobook, but
yes,
but he kind of, yeah, he has a sort of a way of getting some of those across in his voice. So those are kind of there as clues. But.
Yeah, it was like a nudge, nudge, wink, wink, but you know.
Yeah. You know, you know.
Yeah. Was there anything else you guys want to share with us and the fans and our listeners?
Yeah, just go onto Audible and give it 5 stars and then we'll make another one.
Love it. Okay, we'll get the beasties on it.
Oh, you have to, don't you?
I just really hope that you enjoy it and that you will sort of think about audio as a kind of another way that we can sort of be immersed into the wizarding world and kind of enjoy like all of J.K. Rowling's creations in there.
I have questions if you don't mind. Just because I'm from Germany, English is not my first language. For other people, like my friends in Germany, would there be a German version ever to be released of this?
Our intention is to try and, yeah, we want to serve all of the audiences wherever they may be. So we work in Germany. We publish the digital edition of the Rufus Beck recordings. I think we've been working with Audible in Germany to kind of create live reading events with Rufus Beck. So we don't have any plans at the moment, but it's not something, it is possible that could be something we did in the future.
And we're going to start the whole, on MuggleNet, we always have a competition of which version do you enjoy most of the kind of Harry Potter audiobooks. And there's always a fight between Stephen Fry, of course, you know, being a Brit over here. But, you know, maybe we've got a whole other ranking system we're going to have to start arguing about on MuggleNet as well now.
I mean, I know from like a German perspective, everybody loves Rufus Beck. And everyone in Germany who is a Harry Potter fan knows like the way he reads and like can quote stuff from it. He's a legend among Harry Potter fans. He really is.
Yeah, so he recently did a new recording of Quidditch Through the Ages, which we released in March, I think, this year. So yeah, it's really, really great to be able to work. We know that with audio, I think the first narrator that you experience, you can bond with, because that narrator will have worked really hard to kind of create a world with their voice. And when you listen to that, you become, you know, if they're a very good narrator, you will kind of go with them on the journey. So I think that's why people get quite territorial over Stephen Fry or Jim Dale, depending on which one they've heard first. But yeah, so the opportunity to work with Rufus Beck was really amazing, because we know that people feel so passionately about him, and we know that he feels very passionately about the fans as well. So it was really great to be able to kind of bring him back into the studio and kind of get him to continue his performances.
Well, I'm definitely really excited to see kind of where this is gonna go, because I had no idea what to expect, and I sat down and I'm listening and I'm like, oh, you know, this is awesome. And you know, I really hope that this is something that all our listeners and Potter fans around the world get to enjoy more of, because it really did change how you think about the series.
Oh, great. Yeah, that's really great to hear. That's brilliant. yeah, we hope, well, that means a lot.
Oh, I lost a happy 6 hours, you know.
What was your favourite part?
You know, it was just Dan being there and feeling like I've got a friend who's snuck me on set. That was everything to me. And to kind of to learn more about the actors, and I did know little bits about the kind of family of creators from stuff that I've done with Mugglenet, but to kind of get these inside bits and to hear how much these people care about the fandom and how much they care about creating this world, that meant everything to me. For, you know, I'm heavily involved in the fandom, you might have guessed, but that was something really important and felt really special to me, and that's what I really love most about the whole kind of thing.
Oh. Yeah, I find it always mind-blowing, because whenever, like, you know, you go visit the studio tour or you get interviews or like the audiobook, like really the details and everything they think of. And as Hannah said earlier, even like all the props that are in locations, they are not even gonna be on film, but they're all there. It's just, that's just dedication, and I love it.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think a lot of the people that are making the stuff, they make it. They don't know what's going to end up in the final cut. So there's just so much creativity, and it is because it's very authentic. They want to make stuff because they want to build the world in the most authentic way as possible, so that everyone who's playing in that world is really, you know, immersed in it. So I think that one of the things that was just really interesting to me was how you, I guess, as a maker, as a crew member, you just have to believe in everything that you're making. And yeah, quite a lot of the stuff may never end up in the final film. And I think it's that kind of, it's not being precious about, you know, my creation must be seen in the film. It's the fact that it's there to build the world, and it's there to make mm-hmm. things authentic. It's not, and that's probably why when you watch the films, you do get so immersed in them.
I also think we're so lucky that everyone who gets to work on Harry Potter is like so passionate about it, because that is not always the case for like other fandoms. But for Harry Potter or for Fantastic Beasts, we always get people who just love it as much as us fans do, and that's just really great.
Yeah, definitely. I think everyone who's working on those films, and myself included at Pottermore, we feel so lucky to be working here. It's not really like a job. It's like it's like being in a kind of a very passionate and very kind of honoured to be working here. And obviously we feel very much the sort of the fans of the Wizarding World, and we see their reaction a lot to what we do. So I think that's what makes it doubly exciting.
Yeah, it definitely just builds this amazing picture for us, and we just feel lucky that we have all the creators, and we hope you continue to make this awesome content for us. And we'll go give some nice reviews as well, don't worry, you know, we'll put our side of the bargain in.
Thank you.
And keep our fingers crossed for our next edition.
Yeah.
Okay, well noted.
just let us know. And but thank you so much for taking the time to answer all of our questions and to be such great guests. We really appreciate you giving up your time to talk to us.
Thank you.
Oh, we really appreciate it.
No okay. problem.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks again to Hannah and Ravina for joining us. We loved getting to chat with you, and we hope that everybody goes out and listens to the audiobook and gives it a 5-star review on Audible.
Because we need more. Yep. We really need more. Come on, guys.
Yeah.
Let's rally around this.
Dear listeners, you don't get the next episode of this podcast if you don't review the audiobook. There, I said it.
Now, we're going to check we do have some records that, you know, we can track you down and make sure that you write this review.
Yeah, because clearly data protection does not.
We'll set the owls after you. Come on, yeah. The owls will work.
All right. Nope. It's getting dark. We're dark now. We are monitoring our people. Just kidding. We're not.
But please do leave a review, because we love getting more cool stuff like that. Yeah. And I'm sure you guys will do too.
And if you haven't listened to it, then you need to go learn about beast poo. Come on. You do. You know you do.
Are you guys ready for the time turner?
Yeah. I feel ready. Like, where are we going? What's happening? Come on, Aria.
Don't you mean when are we going? Yeah,
that's right.
Liz, you still need to learn about time travel.
Yeah, apparently so. Well, so does... let's not go there.
Oh, yes. Canon or not canon. Anyways. we are going to 1927. Because that's what we just left with Beastie. Before we have to wait another, I don't know how many years till we get the next film.
10. It's 10 now.
Don't tell me that. I'm just going to be like doing the map of how old I'll be.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah. Don't do that. And as it's like the day that we're recording, it's just been 2 days after the Oscars. So we're talking not about the Oscars, but about another prize ceremony. And I wanted to cover the 1927 Nobel Peace Prize winners, which are two people. One is German Ludwig Kitte and French Ferdinand Boisson. I'm saying that's how that's pronounced.
I am not one to judge. I butchered the Ludwig earlier. So, yeah, we're good.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still not really sure how to pronounce the German last name because it's not really German. I'm just, like, claiming that's how that's pronounced.
I would have said Queed, and I'm sure that's wrong.
Well, that sounds French. So, in any case, who are those people? The... Ferdinand Edouard Boisson, that's his full name of the French person. He lived from 1841 to 1933, so just before Hitler came to power in terms of German history, because Hitler came to power in 1933. He was a French academic, educational bureaucrat, pacifist, and radical socialist, or as we call left liberal, politician. He presided over the League of Education from 1902 to 1906 and the Human Rights League from 1914 to 1926. So quite an impressive person.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in World War One, which was, just to refresh people's memories, from 1914 to 1918, Boisson denounced Germany as the aggressor, but was strongly opposed to the harsh treatment to which it was subjected after the war. He feared it would lay the foundations for a revanchist war on Germany's part, and arranged meetings aimed to Franco-Germany reconciliation. This work gained him the Peace Prize together with the German Ludwig Kitte. So, now I'm going to tell you briefly about Ludwig, as I'm going to call him from now on. Guess we're friends.
Yo, Ludwig!
He was born in 1858 and lived till 1941, so he definitely saw parts of the war happening because World War II broke out in 1939. And he was a German politician and pacifist who is mainly remembered today for his criticism of the German Emperor Wilhelm II. He had a doctorate in history but received no official appointments because of his opposition of the German Kaiser.
Oh. Like,
way to go, Ludwig, way to go. He became a member of the International Peace Bureau and endeavored to reduce the hostility between Germany and France after the Franco-German War in 1870-71. And in 1907, he was elected to the German Reichstag and later became president of the German Peace Society. During World War I, he spoke against Germany's annexation of territory from neighboring countries, and as a result, he was placed under political surveillance.
Yikes.
Yeah. Two fun people, aren't they?
I mean, we were just talking about surveilling people, so I feel like we may have hit some really weird undercurrents on this episode.
Oops.
Yeah. And after World War One, Ludwig, as I'm calling him, he was vehemently opposed to the Treaty of Versailles, but for different reasons from German militarists, who hated mainly that the vast restrictions laid upon the German armed forces and the impending economic disaster that would be caused by payment of high reparations that were decreed. He, another German pacifist, thought ahead and hoped that the US president Woodrow Wilson, who I did not know until I researched this, was a US president. I'm very sorry for my ignorance.
I actually have never heard of that president.
Yeah,
not that I'm that great on American presidents, to be honest.
Neither am I. But, you know, he is an American and he was a president.
There you go. So he had hoped that U.S. President Woodrow Wilson would win the day, pointing out that such severe conditions would already sow the seeds of a new war. And I have a quote here, well, a translated quote here, because he obviously said that stuff in German. I'm going to read it out. A humiliated and torn German nation condemned to economic misery would be a constant danger to world peace. Just as a protected German nation whose inalienable rights and subsistence are safeguarded would be a strong pillar of such world peace. May those who are in power today think beyond this day and consider the future of mankind. Their responsibility is enormous. Today, an altogether new order can be created to benefit for all people. Short-sighted misuse of that power can ruin everything.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is really...
And boy, did that not go well. But I just found it really cool that in, like, 27, like, a French and a German who were, like, fighting to get peace between two nations who've been, like, in war. I think they're, like, the longest time of peace before now. It was, like, 20 years, maybe? I'm just pulling that out of my head. But, like, Germany and France were just, like, continuously fighting each other. And obviously after World War One, there are like two people, and obviously loads of others, but those two got the Nobel Peace Prize, telling everyone, hey, like if we don't do this right now, there might be another war within like a short couple of years. And what did happen?
They were all very long-term thinking people.
Yeah.
And they were all right.
This fits perfectly into how Crimes of Grindelwald was set up. I mean, that last quote from our mate Ludwig, that just nails it. And we know J.K. Rowling does a massive amount of research, but yeah, that could have literally been picked up Dumbledore, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, like, you mm-hmm. could, like, change some words and that could be, like, something that Dumbledore said.
Yeah. Hey, I learned about a new president today. Sorry, guys.
Yeah,
sorry.
He was president during World War One. That was his time frame.
Okay.
So.
Well, I'm also kind of considering whether, you know, these people might have actually had a time turner because they were spot on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I just find it like, I mean, a general problem that we have nowadays, where people always say that politicians only think in their terms. They'll be like, okay, whenever they're re-elected, it'll be like 4 or 5 years or whatever. They're going to be like, okay, this is what I'm going to do in those 4 years. And then, like, when re-election comes, they claim what they're going to do in the next 4 years. But that's why, like, climate change is not working, because that's all long-term stuff.
Yeah.
And whoever starts it is going to be the bad person to be like, okay, we're going to cut down. And even though, like, they're knowing, like, in my term, it's probably not going to have much effect. But, like, in 20 years, this is going to be a major thing. And yes, in 20 years, that person is probably not president anymore, but that person would have started it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, that's just a general problem. People just thinking, like, short time frames.
I mean, when Lane, you said, like, maybe it'll be 10 years. You know, for the next installment. I was literally like, you what? I'll be I don't even want to say how old I will be. It's that upsetting. But it is one of those things. It is really hard to consider such a large time frame. I mean, mm-hmm. we're not very good as humans at doing that, are we?
No, we just yeah. like to live in the now.
And right now I need another Beasts film, you know.
You hear that one, bros? We're collecting tomatoes.
Oh, man, imagine that. I go downstairs. Hey, we've got a sweet beastie parcel for you. And I'm like, oh, it's tomatoes.
I mean, it's just like soggy. Yeah.
Especially if it came from like America and stuff. I'd be like, guys, like, what? Where do I put these? Yep.
And also, like, if it came from like America, how did it get through customs?
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm fairly sure fresh produce is not easily to get over the border. I mean, okay. I can still, like, quickly send you stuff before Britain sails away from us.
But... I'm trying to think of what random parcels I've had from, you know, beastie friends. And, like, Amy sent me peanut butter and ranch. So, you know, some things do get through.
Yeah, but that's not fresh.
No, it's not.
I sent you cat treats once.
Yeah, you did. I literally got a box full of cat treats, and my cat went absolutely bonkers. I mean, yep. I think my guinea pigs would appreciate some veggies, but yeah, I don't think they'd make it to Warner Brothers because the Porpentino and Pigwidgeon would eat it.
I'm just going to trust that you have your own fresh produce that you can acquire. And if I have to send you something from America, it'll be less perishable.
Yeah. Well, let's hope I'm not asking for food parcels with Brexit.
We could raise money for you to buy fresh produce.
What was the plan with that? Just throw it at him?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay. All right.
I don't know.
We'll figure something out.
Middle Ages, but
how very Shakespearean of us.
Yeah, but yeah, that's the time turner I picked. I'm sorry, it's another depressing topic for this week's depressing episode.
Well, I don't know. We had a pretty good high in the middle.
Yeah, that's true. We had to counterbalance the high.
So, our podcast question. Instead of it being, you know, a fly on the wall, if you could be a pigeon in the rafters on the Fantastic Beasts set, what would you like to most see or overhear? Yeah.
Yeah.
Let us know.
So we'd love to hear from you. So you can drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets or email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com. And don't forget, you can always leave us a review on iTunes and we'd love to hear what your thoughts are. So pop along there and give us a nice review.
And you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at SpeakBeastie, on Facebook at facebook.com/SpeakBeastie, on Tumblr at SpeakBeastiePodcast.tumblr.com, and you can support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/SpeakBeastie, where you'll find bonus episodes about deleted scenes, among other wonderful things.
I'm Oreo.
I'm Lizzie.
And I'm Lane. Case closed.